One of the things that we do from time to time is have these Ask Kirby questions. So that's what we're going to focus on today. You will notice that there's a handout there, and in the handout there's an outline today, and you will notice that the topic is a little different than what you normally would get in a Sunday school class, and that has to do with some of the questions I received. This one, which was an Ask Kirby, said, is the abuse in the Catholic Church only happening in America? How does the role of the church recover from these events? And I might just mention, I will go through and answer some of this in more detail, but that particular question's easy to respond to, and that is, what has been happening in the Catholic Church here in America has been happening worldwide. If you go to Africa, for example, Kenya and Tanzania, and Samuel probably can speak to what's been going on in Africa better than I can. If you go to Asia, the Filipino church has been certainly in a lot of news, some in Australia. If you go to Europe, you certainly see that. Latin America certainly has been the case. And so this is not just a uniquely American example. This one here, can you comment on the recent sex abuse cover-up in the Catholic Church? Predatory and abusive behavior at Willow Creek, Paige Patterson advocating a number of other things. And then the whole question here, does Pastor Graham and the staff here have true accountability for their behavior, and what assurances do we have the congregation about this? And a little bit later, I'm going to read something from Jarrett Stevens on that that I asked him to write. So again, this is going to be a little different. If you are in the class for the first time, I hope you'll give us one more week, because this is a little bit different. And I think some of you might say, well, this is not something we normally talk about in church. And my question back would be, why aren't we talking about this? If this is not one of the major moral issues of our day, why shouldn't the church occasionally address it? We're going to do so today. And if you think about it, this has not been something that's happened in the last week. This has been something that has been going on for what? Decades? Have you ever heard a sermon on this? Ever heard a Bible teaching on this? So we're going to try to rectify some of that today. And so if you look at the handout, what we're going to try to do is, you know, maybe look a little bit at the news, what are some of the allegations, maybe a little bit of the explanation that has been surfaced, and then look at some scripture passages and talk about recovery. Is everybody with us on that? And so that's kind of the handout today. Now, this one by Jim Garrity, the Catholic Church drives a nail into its own moral authority. And one of the concerns people are saying is, no matter where you fall on the spectrum, whether you're Catholic, Protestant, atheist, agnostic, you know, the church has had some kind of moral authority to speak to those issues. As a matter of fact, if you look at the bulletin today, there is already an attempt to begin to mobilize us for the March for Life that will be taking place in January. So there's going to be a meeting here at the church. And I've oftentimes said, where would we be in the pro-life movement without the Catholic Church? I mean, the Catholic Church was involved long before we as evangelicals got involved. And I'm with a group called Pro Ministries, as Parker mentioned. And I remember when we were speaking on college classes in the 70s, most of the books we were referring to, most of the material, the handbook on abortion, all that was coming from the Catholic Church. Then, of course, Protestants got more involved. But, you know, they had some moral authority to speak to some of those issues. But this sort of undercuts their moral authority, doesn't it, in very significant ways. More than that, as this individual, just, you know, you ever heard the phrase, it was the Pope Catholic, you know, the Catholic Church and the Pope himself have come under some scrutiny as well. So we're going to get into that in just a little more detail, just so that you know what is taking place there. So this is just one of the reasons why I felt that it would be really important to do so. As you look at your handout here, I did send out a note saying that if this would be difficult for you to hear, you know, feel free to leave the class today, but I'm not going to cover it in any detail other than just to maybe as much as possible give us some biblical concepts. But let me, if I can, for just a minute, at least define the terms that we're going to use throughout the conversation this morning. And the first is sexual harassment. And by the way, if you say yourself, I'd like to read a little bit more about this, one of the things we have done at Point of View is we put out a little magazine every month, this one in May, Understanding the Me Too Movement and the Over-Sexualized Culture. And my particular article in that is based on a lot of great material by June Hunt. So you can go to June Hunt, Hope for the Heart, or you could go to this article. If you'd like a copy, you know, just give me your address. I'll mail it to you on Tuesday, and we'd be glad to have you have that. But the definition we're going to use, at least, is sexual harassment is any kind of unwanted sexual behavior, not necessarily touch, that creates an uncomfortable or intimidating environment. Can include all sorts of things. The list is quite long, but I just picked a few. Stares, innuendos, phone calls or stalking, those kinds of things, exhibitionism and the rest. And then sexual assault would be any unwanted sexual behavior, which oftentimes is accomplished through manipulation, through deception, coercion, of abuse, of authority. I'm going to talk about power dynamics in just a minute, intimidation, force, and violence. So that's kind of the world that we find ourselves in right now. Now, I think it's important to recognize that when we start looking at what's in the news, you're getting a lot of different voices simultaneously. And I want to look at this biblically, but I want to, for just a minute, realize that this has been, in large part, come from what has come to be known as the hashtag MeToo movement. And that is, individuals have been willing, of course, if you look at the cover here, I've got Harvey Weinstein, or if you look at some of the other ones that we have in here, you know, you've got the so-called MeToo individuals, or you've got some of the other individuals, the perpetrators, you know, you've got the long list of individuals that have been, if you will, criticized and accused. And so the MeToo movement has been around for a bit of time. This, I think, illustrates the fact that when it came time this last year for Time magazine to pick their person of the year, who did they pick? Well, they picked persons, women, who were willing to come forward and make some of those statements. And so some people have said that in some respects the hashtag MeToo movement has become kind of the third wave of feminism. First wave going all the way back to Susan B. Anthony, the second wave, Betty Friedan. This could be the third wave. Now, in that respect, I think as Christians we'd say, okay, not everything that they're saying would we agree with, but at the same time, it has surfaced the fact that there have been men primarily, although we can talk about a few women as well, but I'm going to use men as a generic, recognize sometimes it is women too that are using harassment, but primarily predatory men in business, politics, athletics, the media that have been able to get away with sexual harassment. If you follow gymnastics, you know that the trial, for example, that was very significant in that regard. If you watch the number of individuals who used to be on your television sets and are not now on your television sets, you're well aware that this has been a phenomenal movement in the terms of the impact that it has had on that. And because of this, victims who sometimes have not been willing to come forward are now willing to speak out and expose some of what has been taking place. And so that has been happening really for more than a year, easily. But it's also now happening within the church as well. And so I think it's important for us to speak to that issue. And so when we talk about that, you know, you think about sexual harassment in Hollywood, just a good illustration of a few of the women that have come forward. And when you want to try to even get a handle on how many people this affected, I just picked this one slide that's available, and that's not even a comprehensive look of all the individuals. So you recognize we're dealing with something that is very significant, even before we get to the issue of what is happening in the church. The Me Too movement has been playing itself out in all sorts of different venues, sometimes in the public arena, sometimes in the courts. And at the same time, one of the things we do point out here, and the article by Penna Dexter, I think, does that very well, is when a snowball gets rolling, sometimes even innocent parties get caught up in all of that. So I want to also, as soon as I show pictures like that, say these are the individuals that have acknowledged something about that being true. But we also recognize the potential of innocent people being caught up. Has that ever happened in Scripture? How about Joseph? You think about that, you know, and probably the best example I can use right now would be Tucker Carlson. If you're not familiar, Tucker Carlson is a host of a program on Fox News, but Tucker Carlson, a couple of years ago, had to deal with a woman that had come forward. A woman, by the way, that as far as I can tell, he never even met, but started accusing him of abuse. And so as a result, found himself trying to, you know, deal with that and respond to that in a way that did not you know, ruin his career. And I think everybody's accepted the fact that she was making these allocations. She was mentally imbalanced, and so sometimes that does take place. Or a more recent example is the individual that President Donald Trump put forward as the Commerce Secretary. You might remember this a year and a half ago, where if you type in his name, the first thing that will pop up on a Google search is his wife on Oprah Winfrey claiming that he abused her. But since she did that decades ago, she has come out and said, I was told by my lawyer to claim that he abused me. He did not. And she has written multiple letters and multiple interviews saying that that's not the case. And it reminds me of the old Yiddish tale that maybe you heard about the woman who was traveling around in the village and spreading gossip. And so the Jewish rabbi said, I want as an experiment for you to take this feather pillow, open it up, and walk around town. And as she walked around town, the feathers came out of the pillow. And then he came back to her and said, now I want you to go and collect all of those feathers. And she could never collect all the feathers back into the feather pillow. And this woman, who was the, at that time, wife, now estranged wife of that individual that was proposed for Commerce Secretary, could not get all the feathers back in the pillow. And as you may know, he never actually served in the Trump administration. So I recognize that in some cases there could be accusations that are unfair. But in most cases, we're dealing with individuals that have acknowledged having done something. We can also, of course, talk about the impact in the workplace. And if you have worked with anybody that's in human resources, you know that there have been all sorts of allegations of harassment and abuse and those kinds of things as well. And so certainly very important issues to address. So let's come back to the Catholic Church for just a few minutes. And that is, this has surfaced rather dramatically in a number of stories because we do know of Thomas McCarrick, who was indeed abusing, and I'm just going to use generic terms here, abusing seminarians. And as a result, now there is at least allegations that the Pope knew about it years ago. Let me give you just a little bit of the background. First of all, even before the revelation of the Pope, let's go back to something that happened a month ago, and that was where you have a grand jury in Pennsylvania that identified more than 300 predator priests, I'm quoting from that indictment there, in six dioceses in Pennsylvania over the course of 70 years that molested and assaulted nearly 1,000 children. So that was one shoe that dropped a month ago. More recently, just 2 weeks ago, another shoe dropped, and this comes from a Vatican diplomat who published an 11-page letter. By the way, all this is available on the internet. You can read it for yourself, you know, and see what is claimed. But these are very specific allegations with very specific individuals in a timeline, which, frankly, reporters could either verify or falsify. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it indicates that, again, that the Pope, that is the current Pope, Pope Francis, knew that Cardinal Theodore McCarrick's misdeeds with seminarians as far back as 2013. So that's 5 years ago. So now you're hearing people saying something I don't think I'd ever would have heard in my lifetime, and that is, should the Pope step down? Should the Pope resign? Don't know where that leads, but again, this is in some respects why some of you have given me some of the Ask Kirby things, because every time we turn around, it seems like there's another story about the Catholic Church. Now, it's tempting to say, well, that's the Catholic Church, but after all, you know, we don't have to worry about that quite so much, because, you know, this is pretty indicting, in which you have the argument that there was sort of a Catholic playbook in Pennsylvania that prevented any kind of dealing with these kinds of issues. And so as a result, that's something systemic within the Catholic Church. But at the same time, you've got to recognize, in just a minute, I want to get to what we need to think about in terms of how we as Christians, Protestants, would respond. But if you want to try to understand all of the issues involved, as I've gotten into this, this, I realize there are whole books written on this subject. One that a lot of people have really begun to focus on is this book called Boys of the Cloth. So I don't know that any of you would be interested in reading it, but it goes into some detail about how maybe even the way in which the Catholic Church is preparing people for the ministry might be flawed. We can talk about the fact that the Catholic Church has various kinds of doctrines which aren't necessarily found in Scripture, but are found in Catholic tradition. And that's like celibacy and Lent and confessional and things of that nature that might contribute to it in one way or another. And even here, this one article, why it's hard in some cases to hold priests accountable for sexual abuse. I know some of you were former Catholics. What was the Catholic view about confessional? Well, the confessional is what? Sacrosanct. And so as a result, if somebody in the confessional were to admit to abusing a child, would they have the freedom in the Catholic Church to report that to the authorities? If by contrast, if somebody were to confess that to one of the pastors at Prestonwood, what would be the first thing they would do? They would notify the authorities. So you can see there's some things within the Catholic Church itself that obviously differ from what we are addressing here at Prestonwood. But let's, if we can, for just a minute, since that was one of the questions, what about Bill Hybels? You might say, well, okay, who's Bill Hybels? I would imagine most of you would know, because one of the most successful mega churches in the country is Willow Creek Church. And of course, because of the tremendous success of that mega church there in the Chicago area, there have been churches all over the country that have modeled what they do in terms of their outreach, and they're having a seeker-sensitive church. They are broadcast, they're up on satellite. And so, in some respects, Bill Hybels is a very significant and has been a very significant figure in this as well. Well, as you can see, notice where I'm quoting this from. This doesn't appear in Christianity Today, although there are articles in Christianity. Where does that appear? In the New York Times. And so, as a result, it talks about investigating the pastor. Well, a number of years ago, he had chosen two individuals that would, in a sense, step into his role, a man and a woman. So a male senior pastor and a female senior pastor. But again, this article from New York Times, of course, this also showed up in many other Christian publications as well. Both of those individuals have resigned, and the church itself is saying we're kind of reevaluating what we're doing. So there is sometimes a tendency to say, well, I'm so sorry what's happening in the Catholic Church over there. Fortunately, we evangelicals don't have that problem. And of course we do. And I just picked one example since that was the one mentioned there, but we can pick others, can't we? And as we get into this, it really brings us into some important questions, and that is one that you can see in your handout. Should we care? And this is a very good piece by David French. David French is a good friend. Matter of fact, he's been in studio with us recently. Matter of fact, next time he's in studio, you might want to meet him. And this month, I might just mention, we're going to have Max Lucado in studio. We're going to have Robert Jeffers in studio. We're going to have Oz Guinness in studio. We hope we're going to have David Jeremiah in studio. So I'll kind of announce some of that if you'd like to meet any of those individuals. But David French, individual that has worked for many years with various religious liberty groups, has a Harvard law degree, wrote this very good piece called Protestants Should Care Deeply About the Catholic Catastrophe. And if you will, for just a minute, you might want to take some notes. Here are his arguments as to why we should be concerned. And first of all, he says, you know, hearing somebody years ago say that the church is like a navy, a collection of ships united in purpose and in destination. Each denomination is like a different ship in the navy, and while each crew is primarily tasked with the health and well-being of its own vessel, it's deeply invested in the strength of the fleet. Each vessel is more vulnerable as the fleet weakens. Now again, we don't tend to do much of anything with the Catholic Church, and in some respects we say we're not even sure we agree with a lot of things in the Catholic Church. But the point is, we're all kind of down in the same shipping lane, if you will. And certainly when we start looking at some of the other scandals in other churches that are like Prestonwood, we should pay attention. So here's his four points, in case you wanted to see why he thinks we should care. care. Number one, we cannot forget that each and every revelation of abuse, he says, is the revelation of a life-altering and sometimes life-shattering event for the victim and a faith-crippling moment for friends, family, and countless others. I so appreciate Jared Stevens today when at one point he says there are some people that are not coming to the church. Why? One of the words he mentioned was what? Abuse. You know, if you've been abused in the church, I mean, some of the most angry people I've ever met, you know, on college campus are those who grew up in the church and faced either abuse or rampant hypocrisy, and they want to have nothing to do with it. So that's the first thing, to recognize that the individuals that we want to share our faith with, or we want to be good farmers, sometimes we're going to run into some people that have really had horrible experiences. And those are individuals who may have turned their back on God. Really, they should maybe turn their back on that church or that individual, but they just don't make that decision. They've turned their back on God, and their salvation's at stake. So that's something to think about. Number two, given the plethora of recent sexual scandals in evangelical churches and seminaries, the Catholic catastrophe should remind us that perhaps only the lack of equivalent hierarchy has spared the evangelical churches from similar systemic sin. We may not have the same kind of scandals because we don't have a hierarchy, you know. Yes, Prestonwood Baptist Church is part of the Southern Baptist Church, but we don't have anything like the hierarchy you have in the Catholic Church, which I think sometimes has allowed that to take place. Third, he says, repetitional harm to the church can sweep far and wide, well beyond the guilty parties themselves. No one should presume that in an increasingly secular world, our fellow citizens can so easily discern the good guys and the bad guys. And Suzanne and I walk every day, and the first thing when we were talking about this, she said, yeah, they're not going to make a distinction between the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, right? He talks about the fact that when he left Tennessee and went to Boston, and he was in Harvard Law School, he was, you know, at the time laughing about some of the televangelist scandals and things like that, and then came to realize that his fellow students said, those are you guys, you know. He would see a real distinction between the televangelist on TV and his evangelical faith. They didn't make that distinction. And you know as well as I do that you've gone out on church visitation, you're knocking on doors, you say, I'm from Prestonwood Baptist Church. They're going, oh, you're one of those people that abuse kids. No, you don't. You see how that just, because people, especially in a secular culture, paint with a really broad brush. And number four, finally, there's an immense theological stakes for the larger church. It's becoming a conflict between traditionalists and those who actually call for greater inclusion. I won't go into this in a lot of detail. This might surface maybe in the future. But one of the arguments being made right now is the reason we have this problem in the Catholic Church is because the Catholic Church says that homosexuality is wrong. Homosexual sex is wrong. And so we need to be more inclusive. So if we were more sexually tolerant in the Catholic Church, in the Baptist Church, we wouldn't have these scandals. I love David French. He has a great response to that. Perhaps the most sexually tolerant location on this planet is Hollywood. Think about this for a minute. Look at the front cover, you know. 50 different individual women have said that he, you know. So if indeed being more sexually tolerant would be the indication that we'd have less problems with sexual abuse, not necessarily. And there's all sorts of other good arguments, but you can see where that kind of leads. But it illustrates again how even this crisis, never let a crisis go to waste if you want to advance a liberal progressive agenda. And so that is certainly the case. So you probably had enough of this now. You say, okay, does the Bible give us any guidelines on this at all? And I, on the handout there, have some of the verses. You might want to write down some of the others as we go through this. You might even want to pull out your Bible and do a sword drill with me. But the first thing is recognize that we're talking about issues like harassment. The scriptures talk about the fact that we should let no unwholesome word, or if you have an ESV, most of us have an English Standard Version, which is in the pew, it'd say no corrupting word. But again, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word is as good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. So first of all, it seems to me that so that we don't want to be perpetuating some kind of culture that could be perceived as harassment, we need to make sure that we watch what we say. And let's face it, there are some jokes that are a little bit sexist. There's some jokes that might be a little bit misinterpreted. A candidate this week used the word monkey, and that got misinterpreted pretty quickly, didn't it? And so sometimes just being really careful about what we say and how we say it is an admonishment to us. And also a good reminder that when we hear somebody else say something, or we see somebody else in our workplace or in our community or our family, maybe we can be a person that brings some corrective. So first of all, that's an incredible passage that is certainly how we should conduct ourselves as individuals. Let's take another one. Certainly, when we talk about individuals that have been facing abuse, harassment, or something of that nature, we should certainly be those who are kind-hearted. In 1 Peter 3:8, to sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Seems to me that that is an attitude that we should have when we're dealing with individuals. By the way, when I talk about this, let's recognize that social statistics are a little fuzzy, but still, the estimates are that probably 1 in 4 women were sexually abused or harassed as children. 1 in 6 men. Now, if this is a representative selection of our society, and it's not, I mean, we're a little more Anglo than the general population, a little more affluent than general population, maybe a little more religious than the general population, but if this is the case, that means right now we have, and you are sitting next to people, or you may yourself have been abused. And that's something that I think we need to pay attention to in terms of how we communicate and how we are kind-hearted and how we're willing to reach out to individuals, because the church should be a place where we are harmonious, sympathetic, kind-hearted towards others, and recognize that others perhaps have faced this very same thing. Here's another one, pure in heart. Of course, Jesus talks about the fact, but the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and slanders. So again, just a reminder that we need to be pure in heart, and we need to call others to do so as well. A couple more. I think I did put this one on the list there. The fact is that God hates violence. In some cases, we're talking about sexual violence and sexual abuse. Psalm 11, the Lord tests the righteous and the wicked, and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. I think I got a typo there. It's supposed to be 11:5, verse 5 there on the handout, so you might check that one there. Then God keeps watch. Sometimes just to recognize that, you know, we live in a scary world. We live in a dangerous world. We send our kids and our grandkids out into that world. It's not the same world that we were in. Maybe we can at least claim the promise there in Psalm 34. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ear is attentive to their cry. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to blot out their name from the earth. Does that mean that abuse will never take place? Sadly, it does. Does that mean violence will never take place? Sadly, it does. And that's another question that those who have been through abuse say, where was God when I was being abused? Where was God when this was happening? You know, and I, you know, think we can come back to that question about, you know, how can we explain evil in the world because we believe in an all-powerful, all-loving God? Another one which we see in the prayer, which we talked about just a week or two ago, about Hannah. And here in her prayer, she says, God will guard the feet of the faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness, for not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. And you know, some people say, well, a lot of these harassers have been able to get away with it until now. A lot of them are caught. You know, and it's possible that they might be able to fool some of the people some of the time. Maybe they might fool all of the people all of the time, but they aren't going to fool God. And there will be a judgment, even so. Well, a couple more. I want to talk a little bit about comfort and healing, but certainly we recognize that the scriptures also talk about this as well. We're going to come back to this passage as we go through this series, by the way, this fall. Isaiah 61, verse 1, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and freedom to prisoners. You know, God certainly wants to help those who were wounded, but I believe that we have a responsibility to heal and to help those, maybe even in our own class here, that are wounded. And then finally, God has plans to prosper you. Now, I recognize this promise is primarily for the nation of Israel, so we don't want to always extrapolate Old Testament prophets and prophecies and promises and claim them for today, but I think the general principle is that just as God had a plan for Israel in the Old Testament, I believe he has a plan for us today in the church age. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. So I just wanted to give you some of those verses just to kind of recognize that I think the scriptures do really speak to those issues, and those are important. So let me just now close with just maybe a little bit of practical advice, not claiming to have all of the answers here. And frankly, if anything, I want this to maybe be the start of a conversation rather than the one-off that we never talk about again, that maybe we can get into. But the first thing is if we're going to be careful, we need to recognize the many faces of harassment. And right now, you may be dealing with something in your own workplace, or you have a friend that is, or a child that is. I'm hoping that maybe you can think about this and recognize that sometimes in the workplace you have degrading remarks, maybe threatening somebody with a loss of a promotion or job. A lot of the Me Too movement came from individuals that had, and we're going to get into this in just a minute, power dynamics over someone else. You know, you do this or you're not going to be in this part. You know, we've heard about the casting couch for decades in Hollywood, but we've seen how that's played itself out. And then even creating a hostile work environment. But again, in this politically correct culture, sometimes hostile work environment means, well, you don't completely accept homosexuality or something like that. So we recognize that sometimes that can be misinterpreted, but we want to look at it at least from a biblical point of view to say there are times when people are doing hostile things which the scriptures speak out against. What about education? You know, again, trading favors for grades, you know, teachers and professors pressuring students, making demeaning comments. And most importantly, I know some of you have kids that might be dating or have been dating, and to be just thinking through the comments that might be made, the pressure to perform, just the need to learn how to say no sometimes is going to be really important in those circumstances. And then, of course, let's just be honest, in the church, sometimes individuals who've been in spiritual authority, they've abused that authority and brought pressure there as well. Well, the power dynamics I just alluded to is something like that. You know, many of these really highly visible cases of sexual harassment occurred because the harasser used his, sometimes her, but mostly his power and position over others. And so we have to understand those power dynamics. Sometimes they may be using it intentionally. Sometimes they didn't even understand it. You know, when you see some of these interviews, they go, well, I didn't know that that was inappropriate. And in a culture that is so strayed from biblical morality, You have some people going, you mean somebody would be offended by me saying that? Somebody be offended by me doing that? You know, there are all sorts of examples. And we even have one example in here of a well-known comedian. Let me see if I can pull it up real quickly. Who just went on a date, Aziz Ansari. And then later, because she thought maybe he was pressuring her a little bit, she accused him of harassment. And he's like, okay. And he didn't know where the line was. Maybe she overreacted to the line, but, you know, that just, in a society that no longer has biblical morality, no longer knows where the lines are, maybe doesn't even believe there are such things as lines, you can see the problem that we find ourselves in today. And then let's just acknowledge something which maybe Jordan Peterson acknowledges and we Christians acknowledge, but almost nobody else does, and that is men and women think differently. Men and women talk differently. So sometimes something that a man says is misinterpreted by a woman, or something that a woman expects and a man doesn't do. And so you have some real significant reasons why some of these have surfaced as well. And then I thought it would be appropriate to even talk about the fact that we are going to have to maybe treat and teach some of our younger individuals what a sexual predator looks like. Because after all, we, again, in a society with no rules, as it says in the book of Judges, where everybody does what is right in their own eyes, sometimes I've run into individuals, and when we've done some of these radio programs, and I've had Mary DeMuth on, and June Hunt and Noel Boucher, I'll sometimes have people call in and say, you know, I was being harassed or abused and I didn't even realize that I was, because they just don't have boundaries and they haven't really thought it through. So what does a sexual predator look like? Well, often he or she acts aggressively towards others, seems to lack empathy towards others. We know from, again, surveys by psychologists that about 3% of the population could be considered sociopaths. In other words, they don't have good empathy towards other individuals. And so that may be just something and is part of their characteristics. They encroach on your activities. So they act possessively of your time. Or they ask all sorts of intrusive questions about your life. Maybe even use the blame game. If you weren't like this, or you didn't dress like this, I wouldn't have done it. You ever heard those? And again, some of you right now, and there's room have said, yes, I have in my mind's eye an individual that fits those characteristics, you know, and that may even have been a family member, could have been a coworker, could have been a boss. And so again, we need to spend some time talking about that as well. The scriptures talk about sexual predators. Well, this I thought was a good verse, Psalm 36:1-4. That is, there's no fear of God before his eyes, for it flatters him in his own eyes. Concerning the discovery of his inquiry and the hatred of it, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. Look at this. He plans wickedness upon his bed. He sets himself on a path that is not good. He does not despise evil. That's a warning, certainly, in Scripture as well. So what about healing? First of all, I think the other obvious question was, okay, what is the church itself doing? And I just thought I'd read this statement that I got from Jarrett Stevens. I can read you policy manuals and all the rest, but I had sent one of these articles to Jarrett and said, how would you respond? He said, well, first of all, good question by the person in your class. I would answer it in a variety of ways. Jarrett Stevens says, first, pastor, that'd be Pastor Graham, meets with the board of trustees of our church on a regular basis. These are men who are free to speak into his life, and they help guard and protect the church by ensuring our bylaws are being implemented and abided by. These are laymen with their hands in the voice, in the heart of the church leadership. A number of us in the church aren't trustees, but we're deacons. Sometimes there's opportunity there. He says, from a purity standpoint, all the ministers are on Covenant Eyes, the software that filters any kind of images and websites. I would also add that we have a partnership with ministers Ministry Safe. I don't know if you know about this one, those of us as deacons do, which is a ministry designed to help train churches in dealing with sexual abuse issues and making sure protocols and policies are in place that protect victims and give ministers and volunteers tools to know what to look for and questions to ask as we seek to minister to our church. I could go on and on, but I thought that was as clear a two-paragraph answer to that question that I can come up with, and if you'd like to go into more depth, I can take you there as well if you'd like. But let's just, before we run out of time, talk about recovery. Lots of ways you can look at this, but again, I thought June Hunt's summary of that is good, that oftentimes whenever somebody has been through any kind of traumatic event, could be abuse or something else, there's oftentimes three stages of recovery. First, the trauma stage, which sometimes happens for a few days or weeks, where a person is traumatized emotionally, physically, and mentally. Then the teetering stage, which lasts longer, where the victim kind of teeters back and forth, you know, between suppressing emotions and surfacing emotions. And whenever I've talked with individuals on the program that have undergone various traumatic events, they'll say, you know, I was doing just fine, and all of a sudden, something just snaps, and it just comes back to me again. And then sometimes I try to suppress it. And of course, we recognize that there are many more victims than those who have actually reported them, because a lot of women, especially that have been traumatized, just want to forget about it. And then finally, the trusting stage, where the survivor may begin to feel increased calm. And so there's some great material which you can get at Hope for the Heart. Matter of fact, they even have a little booklet on sexual assault and abuse if you would want to find that, and also on sexual harassment. And so those are some of the stages of recovery. But what about comfort? Is there a way we can provide comfort? And it seems to me that God has created us with certain needs, the needs of love, of significance, and security. You know, Abraham Maslow talks about this, all sorts of other psychologists do, but let's just go back to what the scriptures talk about, because the scriptures do address this issue of love and significance and security. So I thought I'd give you a verse for each one of those, and then we'll close. The first is love. What does Jesus say? My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. So if there's anything that should really mark us as believers generally, but I hope that would mark us as members of the examined class, is that we would love one another, that we would show love to one another. And if somebody wants to share something out of their life, that we should love them and surround them with love and affirmation. Number two, significance. A key verse there would be Psalm 57. I cry out to the Lord Most High, to God who fulfills His purpose for me. No matter what you've been through, no matter what others have been through, I believe God has a purpose for us. And I gave you Jeremiah 29:11, that God has a plan for you. It was a plan for Israel in the Old Testament, but I think that principle still applies today, that God still has a plan for you in this church age. And then finally, love, significance, security. We really need security, and it's an insecure world. I understand that right now. But nevertheless, in Proverbs 14, it says, whoever fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for children it will be a refuge. And if nothing else, just another promise to place our lives on. But if nothing else, I recognize this is a little more controversial than the kinds of things we cover. But if nothing else, I think I've demonstrated that when you ask an Ask Kirby question, there's nothing off the table. And that's why we want to spend some time talking about that today here in the examine class. Parker?